All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Man, so tight, almost like a playoff game. These words can unite a nation, can unite a fan base. What a tweet. What a tweet. Folks, strap yourselves in. It's going to be an absolutely electric episode of Canucks Conversation. And that is not only because we are brought to you by the 2024 Toyota BZ4X, which you haven't heard, is Toyota's brand new all-electric SUV that's designed to go the distance for you and your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain, whether it's rain, snow, mud, or your friend's questionable post-game recaps. The BZ4X will get you through it all. And of course, we are coming to you from the iconic Wall Center in downtown Vancouver. Looking for your next meeting space? Contact the Wall Center for all your event needs at sales@wallcenter.com. My name is Dave Wadrelli. That is Harmon Dial, our technical producer. The man of the controls is Grady Sass. And folks, I hinted at it. Strap yourselves in. It is going to be an electric episode of Canucks Conversation. We're going to recap the win. We're going to be joined in studio at 2:30 by Frank Saravalli, who still doesn't know that he's going to be part of anyone else. We're going to do anyone else with Frank Saravalli. So if you have questions for Frank, you're going to get a chance to get him in. And I'm watching you, Nar. I'm watching you.
First of all, I just have to say, I got chills at last night's game, man.
Yeah.
I've attended probably 200 plus NHL games at this point over my five seasons covering this team. I've been to 2/3 of the NHL's building, including Madison Square Garden. I've been to the Bell Center in Montreal. I've been to Scotiabank in Toronto. Some of the loudest or most marquee city buildings. I've even been to 2013 as a fan in game two, I believe it was, Canucks versus Sharks. Mm. I have never heard an NHL building as loud as last night's game one against the Nashville Predators. That was hard to put into words. And you could sense the energy just walking to the rink at 6 o'clock, an hour before the game even started. Start to finish, I have never, ever experienced anything like that.
That was the common theme. That was the common theme post-game from fans. Most importantly, I think, from players. Players talking about that. Quinn Hughes also citing a similar thing to what you just said. Oh, he had been to Devils playoff games. He's been to different playoff games around the league. He's never seen anything like that. JT Miller putting it right behind, and yes, right behind the birth of his children and his wedding day in terms of moments, great moments in his life, that means something. And man, for a fan base that has gotten the reputation of being a quiet building to play in, they're going to lose that reputation in these playoffs.
What I love most about that too was when Nashville scored first, I was worried a little bit that you might get a hush in the building, that it might dampen things, quiet them. I love that the crowd responded by elevating their energy. Right away, there was, first of all, on one side of the rink, there was an FU Nashville chant for a little bit, except they weren't saying F, they were actually saying the F word. And then immediately upon puck drop, a Go Canucks Go chant. Like, they did not let up. They did not waver at all, which Talk had also referenced post-game. But that also matters a ton from the player's perspective, because a lot of these guys have not been in high stakes playoff game in this type of environment before. And think about it from their perspective. You allow the first goal and the building all of a sudden goes hush, this electric crowd, you're going to feel some pressure. You're going to feel like, oh, something's changed here. That didn't happen at all with the crowd. And I think that helped the Canucks stay level headed and still feel like, okay, we're in control. We've got this crowd behind us.
The team came out to Where the Streets Have No Name. Here's JT Miller. I kind of referenced it there. Here's JT Miller talking about that and just the crowd reception as a whole.
I'm out on the ice today. It was probably one of the more special things I've been a part of, other than the birth of my children and my wedding. It's hard not to get choked up when you see that. I mean, that literally is everything, that emotion and that noise and the towels. I mean, if you can't get up for that, then you got something wrong with you. Like, that was amazing. I think I got a different perspective on what hockey means to these people here, and it was awesome.
I know I only referenced the start of that quote, but that last line, I think I got a different perspective of what hockey means to the people in this city. I think we all did, to some extent. Like, when was the last time this city came? They didn't do this in 2015. The city didn't come alive. Like, the city was sleeping in 2015, and for good reason. The team wasn't that good. They had a good record, but everybody knew it was the end of the era. Like, it was, you're hanging on to the past. This is a new era, stepping into their own. This is what everybody's been waiting for. This is what people have been waiting for, hell, since Brock Besser was drafted. When Brock Besser made his NHL debut in Minnesota, scored a goal. I think it was assisted by both Sedins, or one of them, I think. Maybe it was Horvat. I don't know who got the assist, but Brock Besser makes his debut. People were waiting for that next era, and they were promised that next era for years by the last management regime, and they never actually got it. They never actually got those meaningful games. We were making the joke every single year that we just want meaningful games in November. This fan base has been starved for so long from watching these players too. These players now have the proper supporting cast around them, and they're now getting the support of the fan base that they absolutely deserve. They absolutely deserve this support.
In the past, even during the 2011 era, yes, that building could get loud, but I never really thought of Rogers Arena as an exceptionally difficult, intimidating building to play in, the same way you would reference, say, TD Garden in Boston or the Blackhawks at the United Center. Again, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but with this type of energy, like, you have to think from Nashville's perspective, especially when the Canucks started to grab momentum of that game, first in the second period when they tied it up and built some momentum, of course, ran into some penalty troubles, but then that sequence where they then tied it and then 12 seconds later, Joshua with the go-ahead goal, like, that's got to be an intimidating feeling from Nashville's perspective, where it feels like everything is going against you.
We're going to break down this game. We're going to break it down in depth. Is there anything, like, pull up the Francesco tweet. Pull up the Francesco tweet. Because after the game, Francesco Aquilini, owner, chairman of the Vancouver Canucks, tweeted out the line. He said the line. He did it. I cannot believe he did it. The vibes are through the roof right now. He tweeted out, man, so tight, almost like a playoff game. And I'm going to explain this quickly because I had people asking, where's this from? This is OG Canucks Twitter. Well, not OG, because there's been years before that. But in 2018, I think it was against the Arizona Coyotes or the LA Kings, one of those teams.
Kings,
thank you. 2-1 overtime loss.
Canucks were in the
meaningless game. Meaningless game. And he tweets out, man, so tight, almost like a playoff game. And so he got tight. Absolutely eviscerated for that tweet. And for good reason. It's been memed to oblivion for years. Francesco kept receipts. 6 years later, he hits send on the hang this in the loop, put it on the TV behind me. This is glorious. At least put it in the Vancouver Art Gallery. This is art right here.
It's that much more special too, because Francesco, he's barely tweeted all season.
No,
like he's so many opportunities to pump his chest out and celebrate Vancouver's return to not only relevance, but a really high, high level of regular season success. But to wait for this moment.
Oh, yeah.
That's beautiful.
Right, I tweeted there. This yesterday. I don't ever want to hear anybody say that Francesco doesn't have a pulse on this market. He's been keeping it, but he's been keeping it quiet.
That is awesome.
Okay, you want to break down the game now?
Yeah.
Okay, before we do that, I'm going to tell you about the Canucks Army playoff shirt. The playoffs are here, and we have an Army Nation gear is here to gear you up for Vancouver's playoff run. Rep your favorite team as they battle for the cup. Shop the exclusive We Have an Army playoff tee, and more at nationgear.ca. Okay, Harm, I'll tell you where this game started for me. We heard over and over that the first 10 minutes of this game would tell us how this series would go. So what did the first 10 minutes tell us? Both goaltenders are going to be sharp. Both goaltenders are going to be the driving force of their team. These teams are going to go as far as their goaltenders. Thatcher Demko kicks things off with a marvelous kick save in the splits off of former Canuck Anthony Beauvillier on a 2-on-1, which, hey, the Canucks aren't going to want to give up many of those, but Demko there to bail them out early. That was the recipe that we've been talking about in recent weeks. Hell, in recent months with this team, is the goaltender coming out playing strong, whether that be Thatcher Demko or Casey DeSmith, playing strong to start the game, kind of weathering some early pressure, swinging all the momentum back in the Canucks' favor. Nashville opens the scoring. Ryan O'Reilly opens the scoring in that game.
It was Zucker.
Zucker, excuse me. Yeah, that was the one through traffic. That's right. I don't want to dissect that goal. I feel like it. I'll dissect it a little bit. And they did a really good job on the broadcast going over it, but it's one of those shots through traffic that you're going to want to limit, right? And I don't want to call it a lucky goal, but that's one Demko usually has, especially if he can see it.
I think both goals for each team, right? Mm-hmm. The Zucker one, the Lindholm one off the rush that tied it, are probably ones that when you're talking about elite star level goaltenders like Demko and Saros, they're going to want those. They're going to want those back.
Yes. Saros again. If Demko wanted the Zucker one back,
that was brutal.
Saros didn't sleep last night over the Lindholm goal. Like, didn't sleep at all.
It was, and this is one thing to notice as well. Throughout the game, you notice that the Canucks were ruthlessly targeting Saros' blocker side. Ruthlessly.
Yeah.
It was so obvious. Even as the game progressed on the power play, for example, there was a play where Elias Pettersson cut into the middle and was so clearly targeting that blocker side.
Yeah.
That happened over and over again. And the Joshua goal that was to make it to 3-2, I don't know if it was intentional because it was sort of heat of the moment, but that ended up being blocker side too. That was actually a really sweet move as well for him to, when he gets the pass, instead of just immediately rifling it on net, that's a high skill, deft play to pull it in and then go against the grain. That's tough for a goalie to stop.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And I mean, like, where do we start? I mean, let's keep talking about the blocker side, but this was the interesting thing I really wanted to bring up when it comes to Saros and how the Canucks beat Saros. Quinn Hughes talked about this postgame when he was doing his walk-off interview with Murph, his postgame interview with Murph, talked about the importance of getting traffic in front of UC Saros. Mike Kelly of NHL Network, who has access to all those stats and no one else does, he tweeted this out. Hughes talking about the importance of screening Saros. Saros had an .863 save percentage on screen shots this season. That is 49th out of 54 qualified goalies. Might be generous to call him qualified at that point. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Getting that traffic in front is so important. And Quinn Hughes pointing it out, The Canucks clearly pre-scouted this. They clearly know that on top of blocker side, because you're absolutely right, they were abusing that blocker side, and they're going to continue to do that, just like they did against Jacob Markstrom in game 81 there. That's really interesting for Mike Kelly. That's a weakness of Saros, is those screenshots. Get the traffic in front of him. Take away his eyes, as Quinn Hughes said.
That's also just an extension of how the Canucks have played in the regular season and manufactured offense anyway, right? It'd be more difficult to execute that if you were a team that didn't already have that as a staple of your offensive game. That's already such a foundational piece of Vancouver's offensive game, is they like to win pucks back on the forecheck. Then they like to go from low to high. They fire a lot of point shots, and they're searching for screens, tips, deflections to create a lot of chaos. So stylistically, it works well in their favor that they've got a goaltender in Saros that overall is still an elite goaltender, but has that weakness this season.
Yeah. Smaller goalie. It happens. Like that happens with smaller goalies. Okay. On the topic of goaltenders, Thatcher Demko was excellent. Saros was good as well. This is going to be a story all game long. Tomorrow, folks, we're going to get into the other storylines around the league and the other games around the league. We're going to talk about Winnipeg and Colorado, but we're going to save that for tomorrow. Today is all about this game. And of course, like I said, in about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Frank Saravalli. Okay. Did you have anything else on goaltenders that you wanted to get to? Because I think that's where the story starts, but the story moves on to the Elias Lindholm, Dakota Joshua, Connor Garland trio and the matchups used by Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, let's talk about that Lindholm line, because it was a masterclass performance. And first of all, this is why I was so adamant that 2-3 weeks ago, for example, when we had Joshua and Garland in a top six role, Lindholm wasn't back yet, I wasn't nearly as confident in this team's depth of their forward lineup as I am since Lindholm has returned and they've been put together, because most teams that go deep in the playoffs have an excellent third line. You think about Vegas winning the cup last year. They had that William Karlsson line, also with Riley Smith on it, that shut down McDavid in the second round of the playoffs, shut down Roope Hintz in a matchup role in the conference final against Dallas. Even the Florida Panthers also making the Stanley Cup final. They had Lundell and Sam Reinhart on a line together. Yes. Imagine having Sam Reinhart on a third line. Yeah. And it was heavy forecheck, responsible defensively, important secondary scoring. Tampa Bay, when they won those back-to-back cups, think about the role that the Coleman Gaudreau Gord line had, forechecking and also taking on tough minutes to free up the point in Stamkos lines. In Pittsburgh, right? Jim Rutherford's team, HBK line, Hagelin, Bonino, Kessel. Like, you need that to be an X factor, because a lot of times you're going to have stars cancel out, and then it's, okay, who has that depth beneath them? And I mean, first of all, defensively, 6-19 head-to-head against the Philip Forsberg line at 5-on-5. Just one shot on goal for them in those minutes. And one specific trait I wanted to point out. I spoke to a player today at practice. They've spoken about how against Nashville, they like to generate a lot of speed, create chances off the rush, of course. And they were sort of referencing the importance of staying above the puck, above Nashville's players. Well, Lindholm is masterful at staying above the puck. Tocchet has consistently referenced it. Yep. Other players have spoken about it. Lindholm is like the poster child of staying above the puck. And last night after the game, Myers had so much praise for all the subtle two-way details of Lindholm's game that go unnoticed. That's an area that allows Lindholm to be successful defensively. And then we speak about JT Miller's line, and they dominated, probably deserved more than the one goal they were on the ice for. A big reason why they were able to feast is because JT Miller was able to feast against the lower part of Nashville's lineup.
And again, Canucks have last change. You and I were talking about this before we went to air. Andrew Brunette kept putting out the fourth line, like not scared of it at all, and put it, and then JT Miller would hop right back over the boards. I wonder if that's going to change in game two. Like, I wonder what adjustments are going to happen in game two. And we're going to talk about this later. And again, we're going to talk about it tomorrow as well when we preview the game a bit more. But it was just one of those things as I was watching was, okay, we see the adjustments that the Canucks are making. We saw the line juggling. We saw the lotto line get some shifts together. We saw all that. And I just felt like there was a lack of that from Nashville. Like a lack of adapting on the fly. And I wonder what's going to change tomorrow with Nashville. And I'm not asking you, it's just something that I'm wondering. Think about it. We can maybe talk about it later. We will certainly talk about it tomorrow. Okay, I wanted to talk about the neutral zone play a little bit here, because you talk about staying above the puck. And again, the broadcast pointed this out. Really good job by the broadcast. Also, yeah, John Shorehouse, Dave Tomlinson, absolutely crushed it. Top-notch call by those guys. Great, great work. But they pointed out that Vancouver was getting their defensemen to pinch in the neutral zone a lot. The forwards were even, they were still forechecking hard, but they were sagging back a bit to be on those breakout passes and on those outlet passes. And Nashville, you and I were talking about it right before we went to air, Nashville greatly struggled to break the puck out as that game went on.
Yeah, in the first period, they were effectively beating Vancouver's forecheck. They were making poised plays under pressure, Nashville's blue line, their wingers on the walls. On defensive zone retrievals, I was impressed. And that first period was played at the type of high-paced tempo that Nashville likes. Both teams were kind of trading chances off the rush. And this is a sort of separate takeaway. Even in that environment where Nashville was able to get its way in terms of an opened up style of game, the Canucks were totally comfortable.
Yeah. There you go.
It wasn't a period where Nashville was starting to decisively take over, which I think is also a positive sign. But by the time we got to the second period, that's when there was, especially after that Lindholm tying goal, there was a stretch of 3 to 4 consecutive shifts where you'd have Vancouver's defenseman pinching up the wall. And what would sort of happen is Nashville's defenseman would go back for a defensive zone retrieval.
Yeah.
They would rim it around the wall, and Vancouver's defensemen were just like right there. Like there was no time and space to make a play, which they weren't as connected in that area. Vancouver's forecheck was in the first period. And each of those instances led to like 30 to 45 second shifts. I mean, Pia Suter had a couple of glorious chances in that time frame. And I'll also say this, if it wasn't for the Canucks running into penalty troubles during the second half of that second period, I think the Canucks were going to totally flatten Nashville in that second period. They were on the cusp of it. You could tell with the momentum that they had. And really, I think that game entirely flipped at 5-on-5 once Vancouver got its forecheck going, and Nashville just didn't look nearly as threatening after that.
And Harmon, something that I admired about this group last night, and JT Miller touched on this in his post-game availability as well, was they entered the second period down by a goal. They entered the third period down by a goal. And you just pointed it out, they were great in the second period. They probably deserved to be up at that point. They were down by a goal heading into the third. But JT Miller talked about how they weren't scared at all. There was no sense of, oh boy, here we go, like we're going to have to battle back. It was, okay, we're the higher seed in this matchup. We should win this series. Let's go get this game. Let's go take care of business. Quinn Hughes. Is Quinn Hughes still given that goal, or did they give it to Suter? Suter. Okay, yeah.
I think. At least
I thought it was Suter. Okay.
The score app says Suter.
Okay. Regardless, Quinn Hughes makes some magic happen, firing a puck through traffic. And again, when we bring up UC Soros through traffic, that's obviously one of the ones that we're talking about. Quinn Hughes fires the puck. Pia Suter tips it past UC Soros to tie it up at 2-even. I would ask you to talk about that goal specifically, but I think we have to also bring up the thing that happened 12 seconds later. The fastest back-to-back goals in Canucks playoff history as the coach Joshua scores. You brought up the goal as well, where he kind of did that little toe drag and goes blocker side on UC Soros. Gives the Canucks the lead. Absolute pandemonium. You were there. How loud was it at Rogers Arena? I'm going to game 2. How loud was it?
Like, I can't put it into words. That's the thing. Like, I legit can't.
Do your ears hurt?
They don't hurt.
But like, you, did you have that when you left the rink? Because I've never had that at Rogers Arena.
I've been to a ridiculously loud event, like concerts and everything. Like, my ears don't really ring or hurt like that.
Wow.
So I'm fortunate that way, I think.
You young whippersnappers.
But I'm telling you, like, I couldn't have a conversation with Drance in the press box, and we were like literally seated right next to each other, and it's a very tight press box.
Wow, lucky you.
And that was like well after the goal horn had gone off. Yeah. Like, this is like the puck drops, and I could bear, like, I'm shouting to Drance, who's literally right next to me.
I'm excited. And man, the vibes are just through the roof. All the people outside the rink, Scott Road, all of that.
I also wanted to say the point you referenced about the Canucks staying patient, not pressing too much, not diving in. First off, I love the example that Taki gave. And if he gave it to us in the media, I'm sure he gave it to the players as well. He gave the example of how a team like Tampa, they could be down 2-1 in the third period, 10 minutes left, and they are not worried at all. They're not pressing. They're not overcommitting. I also think that this team learned a lesson from one of the first times that they played LA. If you remember that game at Rogers Arena, the final scoreline was lopsided, but it was one of those games where LA went up by a goal or two, and the Canucks in that game started to press. It was one of those rare games where it was like, oh boy, like Quinn Hughes is getting caught pinning, guys are turning pucks over, they're forcing plays. Like, what's happening? It sort of unraveled in the beginning of that. It is sort of as in the second half of that second period and the early half of that third period. I'm sure that the Canucks drew from that experience as well that, hey, we can't in these games when we're down against a quality opponent, we can't go wild and overcommit, go diving in on the forecheck, pinch when it doesn't make sense to pinch. We need to keep our composure. And in that game one, the Canucks kept their composure even as they were down.
Kept their composure. And they're going to need to do that all series long. I was asked about this because I did a live mailbag over at Canucks Army today. Someone asked me how I'm feeling about my prediction that the game would be over in five. Pretty damn good. Like, I still think that UC Saros will steal a game for Nashville. Didn't do that last night. Like, that wasn't why the Canucks were down. It wasn't UC Saros coming up playing big. I got a lot of confidence in this team right now, the way they're playing.
Yeah, the only thing the Canucks have to be cautious of as the series progresses is I'm fairly confident in Vancouver at 5-on-5.
Yeah.
And we can absolutely talk about how the penalty kill reverted those last three kills, especially in the third period when PDG took that offensive zone penalty. That's a huge kill because if Nashville scores another one there, that might be the game in that situation. So kudos to the PK outside of that one breakdown on the O'Reilly goal. That's critical, but that's one thing you're going to have to be cautious of is you can't take too many penalties because Nashville's power play has been red hot, second best in the NHL since the All-Star break. And that's the formula for how underdogs take down a team that is better on paper is you can have a game where you're absolutely better than the other team at 5-on-5. But sometimes if they win the special teams better, it doesn't matter. So that's the only thing to keep in mind as the series progresses. I'm not worried about Vancouver special teams at this point. Again, the PK recovered and the Canucks only got two power play opportunities. It's not like it was a game where they went 0-for-5 and you're panicking about the man advantage. But that's just something to keep in mind as the series progresses, because there could be games where you dominate at 5-on-5, but you're also going to need your special teams.
Also
to come
thought the power play got some good looks, the Canucks power play. I thought they actually did get the puck to the inside, which is what they want to do. JT Miller had a shot that he missed the net on. I think Pettersson hit a post. There was a post that was hit. There were some good chances on the power play. I was happy to see that. Anything else on the power play? Because I had something on Nashville's power play I wanted to bring up.
Go ahead.
In my notes last night, I wrote down that Philip Forsberg looked scared out there. Looked like he didn't want to get hit. Looked totally neutralized. Looked bad. Also wrote down that Elias Pettersson didn't look very good. Not scared. I'm not saying Elias Pettersson looked scared out there, but you need more. You need more from Elias Pettersson. He's not getting the hard match. Like, that ultimately is what could give you a game two victory. Is, okay, now Nashville makes their adjustments. Now Nashville knows, okay, you know what? We got to take this Lindholm line way more seriously. We got to watch this Miller line. We got to be really careful about this. And they make their adjustments. You need to have Elias Pettersson as well. Like, Elias Pettersson has to be a threat. And I'm not saying he wasn't last night, but there's more. There's more to give from Elias Pettersson. And I'm not saying he was awful or anything like that. Nothing like that. But there's more. There's more to give. And if the Canucks can get more from Pettersson, it's going to help them in this series. And I'm not trying to look too far ahead, but not having Pettersson at his best will work against Nashville, probably. It worked last night. But it might not help you in rounds two, round three. Certainly not round four. And again, I'm not trying to look too far ahead, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I thought Pettersson was fine. Nothing more, nothing less. Because the key context as well is I thought he had very little help at all on his wings.
Yeah,
Hoglander, I thought, and it's natural, right? First playoff game for him.
Yeah.
I thought he was a little nervous, wasn't handling the puck right. I think he has the capacity to be so, so much better, so much more disruptive. I think you're going to get that. And then Lafferty just wasn't a fit on that line. I mean, even on the soccer goal, right? You want to talk about the breakdown and talk it sort of explain this as well. Pettersson got waived on that face-off. Lafferty took it. And Lafferty now, when you take that draw, you're taking the centerman's responsibilities. Exactly. Instead, he sprayed out to the point.
And again, that was because Pettersson got waived out of the draw.
Yes, and so Zucker had extra time and space. Like, Lafferty in that spot can't
Lafferty spray out. Lafferty went right to the wing, and Pettersson took an extra second to realize, oh, crap, he's going to the wing. He's supposed to be the center. He went and acted as the winger. Pettersson took a second. Bieksa broke this down on the intermission as well. Did a really good job breaking it down.
Even in the first period, there was a play where Lafferty had the puck on a rush on the left side. And just the differential in their hockey IQ, and this isn't meant to be Lafferty because he's been effective for them. He's a good fourth liner. But he was skating up on the left wing, and you could tell Pettersson was slashing across without the puck from the center to that left side. And what he was trying to do was take the weak side defender with him. The weak side defender was following, and the point was to give Lafferty some space to cut towards the middle on the zone entry. Yeah. Lafferty didn't pick up on that and kept skating straight right into Pettersson's path. Those are the plays where it's like, that makes a big difference.
Okay, so I was asked this in the CA mailbag, so I'll ask you the question as well. For Canucks adjustments when it comes to Pettersson, I had someone suggest they should put him on the wing. They should figure out how to get him on the wing. I absolutely think they stick with the three center lineup.
Absolutely.
Any adjustments? Like, what do you do? I would not start Sam Lafferty there.
I thought Mikheyev was fine on that line.
Yeah, that's where I'd go back to.
I thought he had some jump. I mean, one shift in the second period, he
throwing some
like
hits,
a monster,
throwing
right?
some hits.
I was like, where was this competitiveness all season long? So I also just think Hoglander is going to be better too.
Yeah.
And if Hoglander's better as well, I think that'll get Pettersson going. Yes, there's absolutely more to give there. Yep. The Canucks at some point are going to need him to be a playoff game breaker. But considering the circumstances around him, I'm not too worried yet.
Yeah. We haven't even really talked about Dakota Joshua somehow. Scores the go-ahead goal, scores the empty netter, adds an assist, a real coming-out party for Dakota Joshua, who's been great all season long. But, you know, a wise man once told me that Dakota Joshua would be the X factor in the playoffs. I don't know if we can bring him in yet, but Frank Saravalli is sitting right beside me. And we're going to bring him in a second. Frank doesn't even know. Oh, yeah, good. We can bring him in. Frank doesn't know that he's going to be part of our Anyone Else segment. So Anyone Else, Frank, is a segment where we just take listener questions. So people are going to ask you some questions, and we're going to get to it.
Why
and
do you call it Anyone Else?
We call it Anyone Else because... There you go. We need anyone else to chime in. We call it Anyone Else. Like, we've spoken. It's at the end of the show. Anyone else have any questions? That's kind of how we do it. Okay? But before we get to that, we're going to get to a segment that is just titled Frank Saravalli, and it is brought to you by the all-new Daily Faceoff Parlay Challenge. Get ready for the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Each game day, answer four questions, pick the winning team, guess if points will be over or under, predict the first goal, and choose the highest scoring period. Daily winners snag gift cards, while each round's champs pocket cash. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess. It's fast, it's fun, and it's all about hockey. Man, those Stanley Cup playoffs are in full swing, and it's been good. It's been good. It's been good so far. Frank, you were in attendance for game one.
Oh, yeah, in attendance.
And?
Saw Harm. It was great.
And? What'd you think of the game?
I thought it was a pretty methodical win, all things considered, for the Canucks. I thought they were incredibly patient. I thought they stuck with what they were trying to do in light of Nashville trying to force them into some uncomfortable territory. And I thought it was a win that really showed me a lot about the maturity of this team.
Before we sort of dive deep into the game, I know you've been to a lot of playoff games around the NHL. The atmosphere at Rogers Arena, how do you think it stacks up compared to the other playoff games that you've covered?
I would say it was excellent. And yet, I think Canucks fans have another level.
That mic's broken.
Yeah, I see that now. Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Tips. Good work there.
So another level for, do you mean for Canucks fans?
Yeah, why not? It gets, just like the players, they bring the intensity level to level, round to round. Why wouldn't Canucks fans?
Any predictions for this series?
In terms of volume?
Well, what did you say? What was your prediction to start it? Because I said Canucks in 5. That was my prediction. Feeling good about it.
I said Canucks in 6.
And? You decreasing that to 3, 4?
Look, I think there's probably going to be a hiccup here or there for the Canucks. I think that's probably pretty standard. Not everything goes swimmingly, and there is another team involved that obviously has a big say in what happens. I feel pretty good about 6.
What adjustments would you like to see the Nashville Predators make in game 2?
More pushing the pace more, and not speed wise, but there was a little bit of them sitting back and forcing the Canucks to chip and chase and to dump and chase. And that's, you guys know, but like, I'm not telling anyone, that's not Vancouver's game. And so the fact that the Canucks were able to kind of wade through that a bit and then assert themselves, I'd like to see, if I was in Nashville's room, I'd say, why don't we dictate to them how we're going to play instead of sitting back sort of waiting for them to pick through what we're doing? Maybe they feel like this is their best path to success. In saying all that, really, when you think about where the Canucks are, and I mentioned the maturity, and I mentioned the idea of this team learning lessons, which has been really impressive, there's another one to learn here, in that I think what's right in front of them and on the table is they can make this a somewhat short series. You don't need to go the distance here. This is a grueling first round series in terms of travel. This is by far the longest distance that anyone in the NHL has to travel in the first round. It might even be, when it's all said and done, all playoffs.
Yeah.
So do yourself a favor, give yourself the best possible opportunity. And again, not saying foregone conclusion that they win, but just saying if they do, give yourself every opportunity to make life easy.
From Vancouver's standpoint, why do you think that Lindholm, Garland, Joshua line was so effective? Obviously, not only just offensively, but also against that O'Reilly line.
Probably some similarities between O'Reilly and Lindholm and how they play. O'Reilly's obviously more physical. Lindholm is a little bit more cerebral in how he views the ice, but he's also really talented defensively, that his awareness is strong. His positioning is always excellent. And I thought that game, so like, let's take a step back and let's walk through the game. Miller and Pettersson don't get on the score sheet. Lindholm gets an absolute gift from UC Saros, probably one that they're not going to get like that the rest of the series. And a big shot in the arm confidence-wise for Lindholm, but you called it, or the show is Dakota Joshua Mania. I mean, those are the types of contributions that you must have. They're not nice to haves. They're must haves when it comes to the playoffs. And they've gotten a huge, you know, chunk of that to start round one.
What'd you think of Elias Pettersson's game? Obviously kept off the score sheet, but what'd you think of his game?
I thought he was better than okay, but not outstanding. I thought, and honestly, until the third period, do you think Quinn Hughes was noticeable?
I think he wasn't maybe his game breaking self, but
the puck wasn't on his stick nearly as much in the first two periods.
Yes, but the Canucks, I felt, did dominate in terms of offensive zone time. Like,
sure,
all his shifts were spent, I thought, in the offensive zone.
I'm not knocking him. My point is, like, if you consider all these things that lined up, no Miller, no Pettersson, Hughes wasn't a dominant force. Like, those are all really good signs to come out on the other end with a win.
Absolutely.
Canucks in 3. Okay, hard.
Just stepping away from the game a little bit, big picture, like I wrote a piece up at The Athletic or earlier last week, sort of talking to a lot of executives, getting them to anonymously sort of rate playoff teams. And one takeaway that I got was, for the most part, people aren't really buying the Canucks yet as a true cup threat. Yeah, they look at them as a team that, yeah, they'll probably beat Nashville round one, but they aren't really true believers yet. Is that a sentiment that you get as well? And do you think that positions the Canucks well as sort of underdogs and embracing this mentality of, well, the league doesn't fully respect and believe in us yet?
I do think there's a part of the Canucks that's feeling that. What I would say is that's probably a really honest assessment of how the rest of the league views the Canucks. But I have to tell you, seeing that up close and personal, game one, I came away super impressed at the patience that they showed for all the reasons that we, you know, I mentioned right off the top of our segment. The fact that they didn't try and open the game up when trailing 2-1 in the third period, that would have been an easy card to play. There didn't really seem to be any panic, and that part for a team that, look, we've had this conversation multiple times this year on this show, the idea that the Canucks have to go through heartbreak in order to get to where they want to get to. No one is going to take them seriously as a threat until they have a deep run and they fall short and they learn how to win. My question is, I don't think that's written in stone anywhere. I think we would all agree that it's probably a more likely than not necessary path. However, what if some of those lessons that this team needs to learn, they've been learning them since training camp? Because you go through that room and it is methodical in terms of their answers. They are a machine. And I don't mean in winning press conferences. They've actually been talking about being comfortable in one goal games. When you're in their room, there's a sign. It's shaped like a diamond and it says meet pressure with pressure or something like that.
No, that's it. That's it. That's a talkitism.
That is those types of things. Like, what if they've actually been learning those things all year long that they feel really good about being in a situation like they were on Sunday night, first playoff home game in 9 years, knowing people like Harmon Quads are going to be crying and or raising the temperature or panic level had they lost that game. Now, all of a sudden, it feels different, right?
It does.
It's one game, but it's like, okay, sigh of relief. Canucks are on the board. Now what's the next step? And before you get all ahead of yourselves with like the talk of what this can be, yeah, there's going to be some really good teams in front of you. But I think, and I've said this from the very beginning this year, the Canucks are really uniquely structured in having some of the best players in the world at the three or four most key positions in the sport. And when you have that, you have a chance to win.
Canucks in three. Okay, Frank, I wanted to kind of touch on that a little further because you bring up learning those lessons. I almost think it goes back to even last year. And this was a conversation I had last of the season with Tyler Myers telling me about that speech that Patrick Alvin gave them about how we have so many good players in this room, but you don't know how to play as a team. Myers told me that conversation happened at the start of last year when Bruce Boudreau was still the coach. Alvin was coming in there and saying, like, you guys don't know how to play as a team. Tocchet comes in, teaches them how to play as a team, and they hit the ground running in training camp. It feels like those lessons started even last year when they brought Tocchet in.
Well, that's because they did. And that was a big reason why, if you look around the league, I was advocating for a team like the Ottawa Senators. With all due respect to Jacques Martin, bring in your permanent coach in March. Bring him in February, because you may say the season's lost, but I think there's a lot to learn so that when your players set foot in training camp, there's not this feeling out process of, oh, does he like this or that, or how does this work, or what's his temperament with this? You know all those, the answers to those questions before you even get on the plane to come to training camp. That part is big. But then, you know, it's funny you mentioned training camp, because I was thinking about this last night. The day I was here for camp in September, that was the day that Rick Tocchet had kind of publicly slapped Dakota Joshua.
Yep.
And I was here in practice. He was on the fifth line. And Rick Tocchet had said, he needs to pick it up. I know that he played 70-some games last year, but there's no guaranteed spots here, and we need to see more, essentially was the message.
Oh, yeah.
Paraphrasing, but yep. That's pretty close. That's not a button to push. That's a coach, to me, that sees potential and is trying to draw it out of him. And everyone gets motivated in different ways, but all of a sudden realizing as a fifth-round unsigned pick that was a Group 6 free agent, that all of a sudden is his career is flashing before his eyes, like that grabs your attention. And then you see him go on to have what's, you know, would have been a 20 goal season had he not gotten hurt.
And he's going to make a lot of money this offseason.
It's a life changing season.
Absolutely.
It's a player that went from being a fringe NHLer to being a $9 million contract player.
Yep.
When you look at how the Canucks recovered from a special teams perspective, particularly the PK, did you notice anything in terms of adjustments or what they were maybe better executing that allowed them to kill off the three penalties after O'Reilly scored?
Nothing particular. They did a good job limiting shots. I mean, that was a big thing. I wouldn't say that any one facet of what they did stood out to me. Part of it was just, and you can feel this in the building, is like almost like a, even though there was the wave of penalties that had gone against them, they weren't like, they didn't really seem to be rattled by that. I don't know if that makes any sense. Yeah. When I say it, like their body language was really good. I was like, okay, yeah, we're just going to go kill another penalty. You can tell when teams start to tense up, and the Canucks down with penalties, all those things, like there was never really any part of their game where they were like, yeah, we're in one now. Like I didn't see that at all.
Okay, Frank, stick around with us for anyone else, because there's lots of listener questions. People have questions for you. People have questions for us. Just stick around with us till the end of the show.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns. Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Can tell you about one of our sponsors, and that is Four Winds Brewing. We talk a lot about the Four Winds Light Lager because of the Four Winds Light the Lamp contest, but this brewery is known for a heck of a lot more than just a light lager. Four Winds also has a nice, robust lineup of IPAs, whether you're into something nice and light but packed full of flavor in their 4.5% featherweight IPA, or something a little more funky, fruity, and juicy in their World Beer Cup winning Juxtapose IPA, Four Winds has something hoppy to quench your thirst. Head to the Four Winds website to see their full lineup of IPAs and to have them delivered right to your door at fourwindsbrewing.ca, locally owned and operated in Delta. Okay, let's get to anyone else. You want to do anyone else harm?
You have to give me an advance warning for this so that I get it ready.
Why? You don't know how to read?
Well, I don't have the script.
He doesn't have it open. It's okay. Because anyone else is presented by The Vancouver Canadiens, the Seas are back at the net. Catch fireworks, giveaways, Friday nooners, and superstar baseball appearances all spring and summer long. Get your tickets at CanadiansBaseball.com. The Seas are giving away a record 33 giveaways this season. This includes 6 koozies giveaways for the first 6 Sundays of the season from all of their beer partners, and a giveaway every Sunday for Family Fun Sunday for kids 12 and under. They don't take your word for it if you say you're under 12, in my experience. The Seas open up a new homestand on Tuesday, April 23rd. Don't miss the Nooner at the Nat on Friday the 26th or Family Fun Sunday on the 28th. For tickets, call 604-872-5232 or go to CanadiansBaseball.com.
What do you mean they don't take your word for it?
Well,
they don't even need to say anything. You just show up and they're like, here, you're 12.
No, that's I used to have that privilege. In all seriousness,
I need a hat though.
The oldest I need a C's hat. C's hats are nice. Yeah. Yeah. The oldest I got, the 12 and under thing, 14. I was 14 and they
didn't stop lying.
They didn't ID me.
Dude, that was last week.
No, I wish it were longer.
Dude, come on.
I know. It should be.
When you were 16, 17,
I should have been able to pass.
Quads is going to be 63 and they're going to be carding him still.
Yeah, you know, I've started to not get ID'd as much anymore, and it actually kind of hurts my feelings. Because, like...
Bring your kid to the game night.
I know I'm 24, but aren't you supposed to ID till 30? Does that mean people are starting to think I look over 30? Because I disagree.
Arms never had an issue.
Wait, hold on. You don't get ID'd anymore?
Sometimes. Lately,
that person is not doing their job. They're
Thank you.
They're shirking their legal responsibility.
I should start reporting them. Okay, anyways.
Don't be a narc, Quads. You would.
Well, if you're telling me I look old, of course I'm going to tell you. Okay, let's go. Oh, yeah, so this is a question. Anyone going to Greta to see Frank tonight? Frank, tell us what you're doing tonight at Greta Bar, YVR, in Vancouver.
Just hanging out, just being a guy, watching some playoff action. Some cool people, not Quads, are coming to hang out. Harm's going to be there. Thomas Drance is coming down from The Athletic, some other media folks as well. Look, just watching the playoff action tonight. Oilers game, Oilers Kings game one starts at 7. That's when we're going to be hanging out and show up. First beer on me.
Love it.
First beer on him.
Yeah, a little live Q&A.
Yeah.
Be good. Don't even need to buy tickets, folks. Just head on down. Head on down to Greta tonight.
The old Regretta bar.
Regretta.
It might make you regret your Tuesday.
Yep, I saw a lot of people. You were saying, "What are you guys up to?" And people were like, "Recovering from last night, like trying to recover from what happened last night."
That's kind of the best part about playoffs, especially when you get deeper into rounds. You can actually feel like the collective ebb and flow of the city.
Yes,
it's almost like the heartbeat of it. It's from game day to game day. And then in between, everyone's just like hibernating and sucking their thumb, just trying to get to the next game day.
Was that your, I didn't even ask you this. Was this your first playoff game in Vancouver that you've ever seen?
No, I was here for the 2011 Cup final.
Okay.
Should I not bring that up?
No, actually, how did it compare?
Cause
we were just saying that the 2015 playoff berth never happened in this city. Like didn't happen.
How did it compare? I mean, I kind of forget. I would say like the intensity obviously is a lot different.
For sure.
Volume
of the building.
Slightly lower. Like I said, it was good. It was great. But Canucks fans have another level to get to.
That's right. Okay. First question. This one from Karen Versation. It's going to be important for Canucks fans to maintain that level of intensity throughout the playoffs. It clearly had an effect on the players.
No doubt. I mean, the number of players that spoke about being moved by the crowd, even Elias Lindholm saying he got goosebumps, right? And here's a guy that is very cerebral, is not like a guy like JT Miller, for example. He said it
was close to his wedding and the birth of his
kid.
Yes.
But also like a guy like Miller, he has a low activation point to get fired up. Whereas a guy like Lindholm is very even keeled. But if a guy like that is getting goosebumps and is talking about, I had to be careful not to get too amped up. Like, that's telling you something.
Yeah. the quote from JT Miller too was, if you have trouble getting up for that, you got something wrong with you. And it is, right. It's going to be very important.
He had some really good ones last night.
He did. Yeah, you know what? That's
the one where he said about Dakota Joshua, like, he doesn't know how good he is. I thought that was good.
Yeah. JT's are really, and again, a lot of the conversations we've had in this market is that he's got a future in coaching. He wants one. Like, he's a good communicator. Yes. And he knows the game very, very well. Okay.
I'd have to think about that because I don't know if I agree. He would need to, like, take his intensity level down about four.
But he'd mellow out. He'd mellow out. Like Rick Tockett, for example.
He is mellowing out, but no, Rick Tockett has a stoicism about him that.
But Rick Tockett was an emotional player.
Yeah, but like, not like JT. JT has a whole, he's got a whole thing about him. He's got like an aura that. It's a whole package.
Did you happen to see the video of JT's wife in the stands last night?
I did not.
I will have to show it to you after this because it is the best example of a match made in heaven. I will show it to you after. Okay. This one from Andreas Schwab. If you were in charge, would you make any lineup changes to the Canucks for game two? PDG out, Lafferty back on the fourth line, Lindholm on Pettersson's wing. I'll give you guys mine first. You can agree or disagree. I'm taking PDG out, not just because of the penalty. I think you wanted that veteran presence in the lineup for game one. Vasilipod Kolzin deserves to be in the lineup. Vasilipod Kolzin should be on the fourth line.
In place of who?
PDG. Take PDG out.
Oh, yeah. He was really average last night.
Yeah, so I'm putting Pod Kolzin back in the lineup for game two. I'm not shaking up the Lindholm, Garland, Joshua line.
That's really good.
I'm not putting Pettersson on the wing. I'm keeping those three centers. I am putting Ilya Mikheyev back on Elias Pettersson's wing. I know you and I just chatted about this, but that's the lineup changes I'm making, is start the game with Hoglander, Pettersson, Mikheyev, put Pod Kolzin back in place of PDG.
I like that, especially because, knock on wood, at some point you may run into injuries and you don't want a young player like Pod Kolzin to sit for a really long time. And now all of a sudden, no, it's game six. It's an elimination game. We need you. Now you got to make sure that you don't make any mistakes. You just don't want that type of pressure on a guy. And I think getting him an opportunity in a playoff game, especially because PDG was quite average, makes sense.
You know, it'd be interesting, or not interesting, but when I was thinking of, and I've played back that goal of, Joshua scoring the game winner. Had you like flip flopped Garland and Lindholm in that sequence, it would have been so much more believable. Like Garland goes in and throws the big hit. Lindholm takes the puck out of his skates and finds it, and then finds Joshua through that Predators defenseman's legs. And then Joshua, drags it and scores. It's interesting to think about, like, okay, so what, like, you can understand why, though, Sam Lafferty is on the line he's on, because they need that, right?
Yep.
If he's not doing it, who is? Who's starting that combustion on that line?
I think Hoglander, when he's at his best, is absolutely that type of disruptor, has that speed, has that tenacity, wins a lot of battles.
He's got to get there. The consistency to get there.
He just, like, he had the consistency, and I guess, is it really consistency if I was about to finish that sentence at times this season? But they have harnessed Hoglander for good stretches of the year. It just needs to happen. You need to see it. And again, I'm going right back to it. If I'm making changes. Okay.
Or do you just go with it worked, we don't need to fix it?
With Lafferty?
No, with the lineup in general.
No, I don't. Because I don't think Lafferty worked. Right? Like, we saw him get switched up. I don't think Lafferty worked that well. I think that's the change I make, is take PDG out. You put Mikheyev, Hoglander, Pettersson. Like, Frank, remember early on in the season when we were talking to you about concern for Elias Pettersson? That was all about him having not great wingers. His best wingers this season have been Nils Höglander and Ilya Mikheyev, and that came at the end of the season.
It is crazy,
and that's why I ultimately go back to it. And I understand, maybe, and
that's why you kind of reserve comment on his season as a whole.
Yeah, exactly. He admits it's a down year, and it was his best season of his career was last season. There's no denying that. Like, I'll tell you guys, he wasn't on any of my awards ballots, like, whereas maybe in past
years, would he have fit it? Like, well, in past years, he wasn't even really a consideration this year.
Absolutely.
Like a bang.
So that's what I'm saying, is like, last year, past years, he's always on there. Like, he's gotten heart votes. He's gotten
selfie
votes.
I'm saying I was just thinking, like, filling out my ballot last week, he was never even on my list.
Exactly.
Like, hey,
yep.
In fact, if I were to pick someone from the Canucks that could have factored in more, it would have been Miller.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, Miller was named the team's MVP by the fans. They got it wrong. It was undoubtedly Quinn Hughes, but second place.
I could see a really strong argument for Miller.
There's a strong argument, not as strong as Quinn Hughes. Don't make us do this again.
Okay. I don't want to.
Okay. Yeah, here we go. So Frank, this is right in your wheelhouse.
Okay.
This one from Quinn D. Joshua keeps this up. Canucks will have no choice but to re-sign him, give him a 3 to 5 year deal, maybe move Mikheyev if possible to help pay for Joshua's new deal. He's exactly the grit we need. Frank, the price is only going to go up if Dakota Joshua continues to play like this in the playoffs and when the games matter the most. But what do you project for Dakota Joshua's next contract? Because Harmon and I threw out the old, and you said $9 million. So I don't know. Are you doing 3x3 there?
Yeah.
That's kind of what
that was. That's the ballpark. Yeah.
That's the ballpark we're thinking. But if he has a strong playoffs, and again, this is an if.
There's a limit to, like, and here's the thing. I'm going to eat my words that I said. I think I said it on Sakaris and Price a few weeks ago, that you always get in trouble when you sign third line players to deals of that magnitude, mm-hmm. meaning that's the easiest or quickest path to screwing up your cap.
Sure.
In this case, I don't know that the Canucks have a choice.
What do you project it at?
Exactly that. 3x3. You found a fit here. You've got a coach who believes in you. You've got a chance to win. This is money that you never thought you'd make.
Yeah.
Is the extra whatever it is that you might be able to get on the market, is it worth it?
Yeah.
That would be my pitch to him.
Nemesis saying 3x3 for Dak is a no-brainer. Hard to disagree. Harmon?
You do that in a heartbeat if you're the Canucks. The only worry is, is there a team that would look at the uniqueness of his profile as a guy that has that type of size, has developed defensively, has become a key penalty killer,
performed in the playoffs?
Well, what if they give him more term, right? Or go a bit above $3 million? Like, what if it's closer to, like, and obviously Nick Paul's different because he's a center, so he's more valuable in that sense. But, or like, for example, Pierre Engvall somehow got the deal that he did, which was like 7 or 8 years.
That Engvall deal is one of the dumbest.
But that's the thing, right? It only takes one team
to be dumb.
At that point, I think you just shake his hand and just say,
this is our offer.
All the best.
Yeah. Okay. This one for Harmon from Captain Canuck. Harm, what do you think of these penalties getting called? I thought this was playoff hockey. Let the boys play.
I didn't really have a problem with the penalties that were called on the Canucks, honestly. Like, is there one that stood out to you as egregious?
A couple of them were actually really good calls. Yeah, the one holding the stick one was
sharp.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That was a really, like, to see that in the moment and get it right, the hand that went over the top on the stick and then he fell down. I forget who it was.
Well, Hronek took the penalty.
It was Hronek, yeah. That was a great call.
Like, Bluger's was a clear interference.
Talkett was happy with the officiating post-game.
He made a point
of pointing it out.
Honestly, the only thing that I thought might have been questionable would have been the last 2 minutes. It seemed like they missed one or two penalties that would have been easy calls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, besides that, I thought the officiating was fine.
Jeremy Lee, what do you guys think is the spark that PD needs to play his maximum potential? In the offseason,
you just said it, good teammates.
Yeah.
Good line mates.
Get better line mates.
Yeah.
But also, like, as much as we're going to talk about Elias Pettersson, yeah, maybe he wasn't on his game. Like, Nils Höglander needs to be a part of that line. Like, Nils Höglander needs to be an active member of that line, and help Ilya Mikheyev too. Like, you need your line mates if you're Elias Pettersson, right? And that's why ultimately I go to it. I go to that trio.
Do you know what someone listening would say? And I can't see the chat, so I don't know if anyone said it.
Mm-hmm.
They would say, was he a driver or is he not?
Pettersson?
That's a fair question to ask.
If you're saying, oh, his line mates aren't any good, someone making that amount of money or future money should be driving it themselves.
Yeah, that's part of the onus. Absolutely. And that's why, I mean, it's game one, so you you're not obviously hitting the panic button or you're not worrying about it.
He was fine. But he wasn't bad.
Yeah, exactly.
He just, there were a couple looks that he had that were good. He just, it's the same. I think it's unfair to say the same thing, but he doesn't seem as engaged as he normally does.
Yeah, there's, like last season, there was a different level of dynamic ability, a different level of, I'm just taking this game over and I'm so obviously the best player on the ice, that we haven't seen for a while, especially in the second half of the season heading into the playoffs. So absolutely, they're going to need that level of him at some point if they're going to make a deep playoff run. And that has to come, like, yes, Hoglander will be better. Yes, you're hoping for more from Mikheyev. But even independent of his line mates, that's still going to need to come from Pettersson himself too.
This one from Corey Anderson. So Lindy Ruff lands in Buffalo moments before he went to air. Why do we see the same tired coaches over and over again? Is there seriously no one else that can coach in the NHL? Your reaction to them bringing in Lindy Ruff and also that question.
Well, not really a surprise, because that was sort of the undercurrent and rumor from Jump Street that, I mean, Kevin Adams in his press release today referenced the idea of a coaching process and search. To my knowledge, I don't even know that they interviewed anyone else. Maybe they did. But I think this was mostly pretty cooked. And I'm surprised only because I watched New Jersey really closely this year, and I listened to the Sabres players after they wrapped up their season, and the players said, this is from them, not from the management. They said, too casual and too comfortable. Those were two buzzwords from locker cleanout day from the Sabres. And I watched the Devils this year, and it was like the inmates were running the asylum. There was no attention to detail and little accountability. And that was also on a young team. You've got another young team in the Sabres now that is desperately craving structure. Why is Lindy Ruff the guy that's automatically positioned to do it? I don't really understand. It's kind of a bizarre hire to me.
Fully agree. I look at them and I think, you know, them and Ottawa, they are in a similar situation as Vancouver, where you have like a promising core, but there are just so many flaws defensively, in the accountability, in just playing as a team. And you need to find your Rick Tocchet, essentially. And again, watching that Devils team, I don't think that Lindy Ruff is the answer for that.
Maybe if you think he is, fine. But how could you say it definitively without actually going through a search and knowing that's the other part I don't understand? Like, how could you watch what you saw in New Jersey and say, I don't even need to think about this?
Yeah.
A guy like Craig Berube, perhaps, hard ass, get the guys going. And you heard Casey Mittelstadt when he got traded to Colorado. One of the first things he was asked about, what's the difference between here and Buffalo? And he said, well, they sure as hell practice a lot harder here. And that was an indictment on the entire Sabres organization. So there you go.
Okay. This is a fun. Anyone else got a new sponsor to tell you about? Frank, thanks for doing this. Did you guys have anything else that you wanted to bring up?
I want to give a quick shout out to Booster Juice.
Hell yeah.
They're awesome. Visited them over today at Harbor Center. And look, for me, the hardest thing when you go city to city in the playoffs, like I am, look at me. Obviously, I'm the picture of health, but I can't find somewhere to eat quick, but also healthy. And this is a great option at Booster Juice. Refuel, re-energize, recharge. 400 locations across Canada. That's the place to do it.
When I'm traveling on the road, like I am always hitting up Booster Juice, especially like when I'm home here, I hit my protein shakes. And extra, like you, I need something that's like tasty, but also, like, I don't feel bad about eating
or
obviously drinking. And I love Booster Juice.
So when I'm on the road, I'm sure to hit our new sponsor, Bet365. We are thrilled to welcome Bet365 as our sports betting partner just in time for the 2024 playoffs. We'll be here with Bet365 to provide you all the news, analysis, lines, and betting options for the playoffs until one team is left standing in June. Bet365 is the largest sports betting platform globally. Open an account with Bet365 today and use promo code VANBONUS, VANBONUS, to bet on a huge range of markets. So whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Here is our Bet365 bet of the day. Pull it up, Grady. Miss doing these.
1 second, I'm rendering here. There it is.
What do you think, Frank? Quinn Hughes to win the Conn Smythe Trophy at plus 4,000 odds. A $10 bet returns you $410.
Homer. You're better off going to spend that $10 at Booster Juice.
Hey, you know what? People bring it up. I once threw out, before the World Juniors, I threw out Jonathan Lekaramaki, I think also at plus 4,000 odds to lead the tournament in scoring, and he did it.
And the guy put like $100 down on it, so he
was starting to think about.
Do you have receipts?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
The guy tweeted it.
So I had people.
I'm gonna need to see those.
Yeah. We'll show.
Just like I'm gonna need to see your license later at Greta Bar.
All right, so go check out Bet365.
I'm gonna be just pointing out, I love to do this once in a while, is when I'm going with friends and there's somebody that, like, one of our friends looks a little younger, I'll just be like, yeah, that's a fake ID, just so you know, that's a fake ID.
Just absolutely grind them in front of the guy checking IDs. Yeah.
I've never had anybody do that to me.
Just weight quads.
Better. That's because they feel bad because the person would believe them.
No, but I say it in like a laughing way where
I know, but I, you can't say it around quads.
I'll get kicked out.
Here's McLovin over here.
No, I'm hosting this event. I promise.
He actually is McLovin. That's how I just figured it out. That's what you are.
We just need the glasses for you.
I am McLovin.
You are McLovin.
That's such a great movie. That's one of my favorite comedies.
One of my favorites.
Okay, I haven't anyone else. We're going to wrap up here soon. Frank, you're on a deserted island. You got three movies. You can bring three movies with you. I'll go first. To set the tone, Stand By Me, Good Will Hunting, and The Sandlot. Those are my three movies.
What kind of island is this?
It's the island that I'm watching movies on.
I'm going Dumb and Dumber,
mm-hmm.
Godfather Part 1.
Nice.
And I need a rom-com in there. I'm going to go Love Actually.
Love Actually is a good one. You know what I really like is Crazy Stupid Love with Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling. That's a great movie.
That's a pretty good one.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Okay, good. You want to change your number three?
No.
Okay.
Harm? I feel pretty good. Like, Love Actually is nice and long, too.
Yep.
So it could get you through a lonely night on the island.
Well, there's going to be a lot of lonely nights on the island.
Hmm. Probably take... I need to pick for, like, a comedy, and there are very different comedy types, but... Either like a Borat or a Wolf of Wall Street.
Ooh, Wolf of Wall Street. That's my drunk go-to movie of choice.
Yeah.
You know, like some people come home and cook or do whatever. I turn on Wolf of Wall Street.
It's amazing. Time. I think I lean Wolf of Wall Street. After that, I'll go Batman, the Dark Knight Rises one.
Oh, good one.
Like 2011.
Good one.
I think it was.
Yeah.
You're going action movie? But there's how many times in a row can you watch that? Doesn't it?
That's
so
true.
It's like,
that's,
it's kind of like,
that's,
it's
fair.
The old. Like Bud Light question, like the drinkability. You need that. Like, you need watchability.
You know what? That's a good point. I hadn't thought that deep.
Like, you could watch it five times, but if you got to 50, would you be like, oh my God, what am I doing?
Yeah. And then what's the name of that movie that you referenced?
Shrek 2.
No, the one with McLovin.
And Superbad.
Superbad. Yeah. Superbad.
That's a great movie.
Sure.
That's a great movie.
I would 100% be in there.
That's, I think I've advanced past Superbad stage.
Not
to say I'm too old for it. I've selected Dumb and Dumber. I mean, like, I just
love about the Wolf of Wall Street.
If it's on TV, like, I'm just changing the channel now.
Nara is saying Dumb and Dumber is an elite pick.
Yep. If Dumb and Dumber's on, I don't care what else is happening. I can't focus on anything else. I can't get work done. I can't hang with my kids. I'm glued to the TV. That's it. I'm done.
I love it.
No Slapshot or Goon? No hockey movies? Miracle?
I have not seen any of those movies.
You haven't seen Slapshot?
None of them.
I haven't either. I
haven't seen any
Miracle
of them.
Miracle on Ice with Herb Brooks?
We're going to get our PHWA voting card taken away.
What?
Wow. Yeah, no, never seen them. The other thing that we just
you don't know who Dickie Dunn is.
No.
Oh my god. How can you be a hockey writer without knowing who Dickie Dunn
so,
is?
So
who are the Charleston Chiefs squads?
Last I don't know. Last week we discovered that Harmon hasn't watched any of the Star Wars movies.
I've never seen Star Wars either.
Let's okay. go. Let's
and
go.
And I don't ever really want to see Star Wars.
Okay. Let's go.
Okay. Okay. Do you know like the path of how Darth Vader becomes Darth Vader? Like, do you know who he was before that? Because I've seen the Star Wars movies maybe once.
No, and I don't really care.
Let's go. Okay.
I don't care what you Fair say. Enough. I'm never gonna be like, yeah, I want to devote the next 15 hours of my life to learning about some sci-fi futuristic whatever.
Great take.
Goes in reverse.
I'm good.
Quads gave me too much grief for that.
What's that? There's a new movie that came out a couple weeks ago. Oh man, it's four letters. The Dune.
Dune. Oh, yeah. Dune 2.
Dune and Dune 2. Like my kids and wife went to see that. I'm like, do you want to go? I'm like, no.
How old are your kids?
10 and 8.
That's a isn't complex.
That
a,
isn't
we were, they loved it, but I'm like, oh.
Pod Colson and Hughes quite famously went to that movie and both of them came out very confused.
No,
Colson
no.
didn't speak English, but Hughes didn't understand it either.
First off, what nobody said hockey guys are mentally
okay, what am I
like,
wrong?
We never confused the two. And second, that type of movie just doesn't appeal to me.
Oh, it was so the story was Hughes decided first road trip for like Pod Colson and Hoagland. He's like, yeah. I'm gonna take you guys. So it was Hoagland and Pod Colson fell asleep. Like they didn't they fell asleep. And then Hughes was like,
no wonder they didn't understand it.
And then Hughes was like, you know what, probably not a great movie because as an English speaker myself, it was hard to follow along with. And then he made up for it. I think he took them to some superhero movie later in the year.
Dude, yeah. I have some serious questions about this team now.
Okay, well, show's basically over, folks. We're just spitballing at this point, but we should probably close it out. Any final thoughts, gentlemen?
Come to Greta Bar tonight.
There you go.
Hang out. I got
Moneyball. There's a movie.
That's poor watchability.
Oh, fair enough. I guess yeah. If you take into consideration that you gotta watch it 50 times,
you only get three.
Yeah.
So you gotta choose carefully.
You know, I brought up Shrek 2. Legitimately, Shrek 2. I could watch it endlessly. You watch Shrek 2?
Of course, but okay. That's a choice.
Yeah.
To make that one of your three.
My four. If I had four. Okay, Greta Bar tonight. You will be there. Frank, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you guys in person.
Yeah, it's nice.
What a treat.
What a treat. What a treat. And we will be back tomorrow. It's going to be a remote edition as we preview game two between the Canucks and Predators. We're also going to look at what's happened around the league because, hey, we talked about movies. We did not talk about what's happened through the rest of the Stanley Cup playoffs, but we will close it out there for Frank Saravelli and my co-host, Harmon Dial. My name is Dave Guadrelli. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Canucks Conversation. Canucks Conversation with Harmon and Quads brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back and still be home in time for the game. Now that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.